paid into Medicare for decades. Don't spend retirement limping. The Joint Relief Institute treats joint pain fast. It's covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000.
Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch, a Tuesday afternoon on 720 WGN. Andrew Herman from DNA Info will be along in just a bit, as he usually is. We're going to talk actually about the invasion of a Detroit pizza chain, not Domino's, but another one that's coming into the area. And apparently it sort of signals the huge Michigan population in Chicago. I don't know. We'll kick that around with Andrew Herman a little bit. Suzanne Mushin in a little bit later as well. And we kind of picked on Sheryl Sandberg last week for her Lean In book, how she had backed away from that. She gave a pretty moving commencement address last weekend, and Suzanne wants to talk about that. Also, the House acted today on whether girls, women, should register for the military draft, just as men do and have had to do for decades now. The House Republicans stripped that. Suzanne wants to talk about that, and honestly, I have no idea what her view is going to be. She sometimes is not very predictable. I try to figure out John Najarian, where she's going to go, and I'm always wrong. Najarian is here. You watch him on CNBC, follow him on Twitter as well, to talk about the stock market. John Najarian, welcome to the Business Lunch.
With you, Stephen. Thank you.
You know, it looks like I was just looking at the Dow, and we were comfortably down around 50 points or so. I just gave it another look, and we're down about 100. Has something happened in just the last few minutes?
Well, the market is a little nervous right here. Some of it from the two-day Fed meeting that we've got. We're going to get the minutes released tomorrow. And basically, some of the latest readings have been a little stronger, and that, in some people's minds, Stephen, brings June back onto the table. I think the Fed is loath to move in June because of the Brexit, the potential exit out of the EU by the UK, and I think that will keep them on the sidelines no matter how good various economic conditions might be here at home. And quite frankly, the Fed, also the Atlanta Fed, that is, downgraded GDP forecasts just after the opening this morning.
Oh.
That could be weighing on the markets a little bit here as well.
I know that the Obama administration is going to come out with its overtime rules, the revision of the overtime rules that probably, I think, tomorrow. Will that have an impact on Wall Street? Or I would imagine it would, right?
It sure could, yeah. Obviously, one of the issues has clearly been employment since 2008. And some people, including me, would point to the Affordable Care Act as one of the culprits, perhaps, that and maybe a little over-aggressive legislation on the Dodd-Frank side as to why we've had such a tough time getting going. But certainly overtime rules and changes to that could certainly affect some really big players in the market, obviously the Walmarts and so forth, but there's a whole bunch of others that have contract workers rather than salaried workers that are going to be impacted by a change that could be made by the president.
Yeah, well, it's a big thing, isn't it? We're becoming a contract worker economy in many ways, and it'll be interesting to see how that changes if these rules make a real impact on all of that. But that's what we are, right? We're becoming sort of an Uber workforce.
Yep, it's an on-demand workforce, and those kinds, of course, you're not going to pay a salary to. You're going to basically get paid perhaps even a little bit more per job, but it's going to be at the whims of the market. And if indeed the market for hours worked, the overtime rules changed, well, that could be another perhaps negative. I hope not, but could be another negative for employment.
I was reading an essay, and I don't even remember, John, what the point of the essayist was, but a statistic jumped out at me, and it was something I hadn't really thought about. The guy said that Gallup regularly surveys Americans when it comes to their ownership or their participation in the stock market. And I guess one of the recent surveys found that 52% of Americans said they had money in the stock market, which is the lowest ownership rate in their 19 years of polling. I don't know if you have thoughts on that, but it just kind of struck me because we've talked from time to time about how millennials are saving more money, but they are not sort of playing with stocks. I mean, what do you make of a number like that? Is that anything that we should even bother to think about?
I think things like The Big Short and Flash Boys, both great books by Michael Lewis, but both sort of demonize the market in general as being a rigged game. And I think millennials are smart enough to know if something's rigged, you probably would rather be on the rigging side rather than the chump side. On the other hand, I think there's plenty of opportunity in the market, and I don't think it's rigged. But I do think that when people hear about trades that are made thousands of times per second, they wonder, well, is that an investment or is that really just that algorithm reacting to little twitches back and forth in the market, like the one you described at the top?
Right.
And you said we went from down 50 to down 100. That used to be a big deal. Now it happens every day.
What do you make of George Soros spending so much money on gold this week? Barrick gold, I think it was.
Yeah, apparently loading into that one and buying a bunch of puts on the S&P. Mr. Soros isn't always right. That's one thing, just like Mr. Buffett isn't always right, that I'd point out. And he is nearly always somebody looking for, you know, that sledgehammer hiding in the just behind the next door. So he has profited mightily from betting against the British pound and other currencies, as well as betting against economies. And this latest trade, I think, is just a recognition of, with central banks continuing to take interest rates to zero or even negative overseas, that means a commodity like gold should be part of people's portfolios, and he's made it a much bigger part of his portfolio now.
All right, we learned today builders ramped up construction of new homes in April, maybe a sign that the economic growth in housing is turning around. And then Home Depot was out with some pretty encouraging numbers, right? So are we all heading to our ACE and our home improvement stores as the springtime approaches?
I don't think we are, but I think we do tend to go there. And I've said, Stephen, that I think Home Depot is, and Lowe's, the two publicly traded big boys in that space, are two examples of stocks that can't be Amazoned. Because when you need that fertilizer or the rake or whatever it might be, sure, if you think about it weeks ahead of time or days these days with Amazon two-day delivery, you can get it. But when you go on a Saturday morning and decide you're going to do that yard work,
or your wife tells you.
Yeah, or your wife tells you, and it's a honeydew. Well, then you're going to go out and do it, and you're not going to order the paint from online with Amazon. You're going to walk into Lowe's or Home Depot or Menards. So I'm not surprised that they're doing well, but I think some of the recent pops in the cost of energy, crude oil in particular, that, of course, filters its way into diesel for these companies, that crimped them a little bit. They probably were looking for the $30 level to stick around a little longer, and it would have allowed them to make a little bit more money. I think that's why people sold, even though they had great earnings and great guidance.
John Najarian, great to talk to you again today. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Stephen.
That's the great John Najarian. You can follow him on Twitter at John Najarian. This is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Andrew Herman from DNA Info Chicago just around the corner. Well, 22, you're listening to the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Andrew Herman is here from DNA Info Chicago. Comes by from time to time to talk about openings and closings in the city. Andrew, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Hi, Steve.
All right. I was emailing you last night. Do you remember the there was a Michigan hamburger joint called Redimax? Do you remember that at all?
No, I saw that email and I thought, I've never heard of this place.
It was, I just thought maybe you didn't read it because you didn't respond. But,
no.
But you read it, huh?
I did read about it.
I think it was in New Buffalo, Michigan, and then they had it on Lincoln Avenue back when the jukebox place used to be on Lincoln Avenue, Lincoln and Belden maybe.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, it was supposed to be the rage in Michigan, and so they made a go of it here. I bring it up because you write this week about Jet's Pizza, which is a Michigan pizza chain making inroads in Chicago.
Right. They call this Detroit pizza, and it's kind of a... Say that again.
What?
Detroit pizza. It's in a long pan, you know, and
sure.
So it's sort of oblong and...
like pan. We used to call it pan pizza.
Yeah. It's a little like deep dish, but they say it's lighter. It has this caramelized crust, and they're opening... a store in Wicker Park at 1811 West North Avenue, and this will be the fifth in the city.
Now, who's supporting this? Are these Chicagoans going to these
places?
Well,
they think that, you know, everyone will love Jet's Pizza, obviously, but there are a lot of Michigan diaspora who live in Chicago, and it's kind of become sort of a concern of Michigan that so many of their young people, they graduate from Michigan universities and then they move out of Michigan. I saw a figure recently that 40% of recent Michigan college graduates moved out of Michigan.
Wow.
And about 20% of those moved to Illinois.
No kidding.
Yeah. So
that's something that they've actually talked about.
Yeah. So they estimate there's 45,000 Michigan State and University of Michigan alumni in the Chicago area. So they...
Yeah, well we know if they went to Michigan because they tell us.
Right, exactly. So this is a problem maybe for Michigan, but for Jet's Pizza, they think that maybe they'll be able to connect with people who already know them.
Well, you know, if it is pan pizza, like I remember as growing up, we used to make it with the Bisquick. there's not really a lot of that in town, right? I mean, you've got the stuffed pizza and then the thin crust.
Yeah, this is sort of a whole other thing. And the backstory on this is that a guy named Eugene Jets, when he was 23 years old, and this was in 1978, he had saved $20,000, and his parents, of course, said, you should buy a house with that. And
uh-huh.
He instead went into a pizza business with his 18-year-old brother, and it took about 3 years for it to take off, and they tried all kinds of different things, two-for-one deals, and they used their mother's recipe. But 3 years later, it took off, and today there's 300 franchises across the country.
And it's better than Domino's. Another Michigan.
I can't say that I've had Jet's Pizza, but it looks delicious.
It would have to be, wouldn't it?
It does look delicious.
What is Joe Perillo doing opening up a hotel in the West Loop?
Right, so we know him from the auto dealership.
Sure.
Right? Mm-hmm. So he has opened Hotel Chicago at 1622 West Jackson, and as you say, that's in the Illinois Medical District, and this is that area on the west side near the old Cook County Hospital. There's four hospitals there now: Stroger, Rush, U of I Medical Center, and the Jesse Brown VA Hospital. So it's really busy over there.
Yeah.
50,000 people a day go into this neighborhood.
And so his idea is like a European boutique hotel there?
Well, they certainly need it because they don't have a lot of hotels, and they have four hospitals with 2,000 beds. So you have a natural audience of people visiting their loved ones who are in the hospital. You have vendors. You have all kinds of people doing business with the hospitals. So he has opened up this hotel. It's not very big. 117 rooms, and it's in a vintage building, four-story vintage building.
Do you know what's behind it? I mean, has this been... Are they going to move this way? Has it always been a goal of his, a dream of his?
I don't know. I do know that this...
Are the beds like little race cars?
No, but when you look around the rooms, you can tell that some of them are designed for families because some of the rooms have bunk beds in them.
Oh, yeah. I read that. It didn't make the connection because of the hospitals,
right,
probably.
Right. So this is in the former Rosemore Hotel. So there was a little controversy at the beginning because this was one of those SRO hotels that poor people basically live in.
Oh, yeah.
And they get, they have to, I don't know, however you want to characterize it, but they move on or are moved on when a neighborhood gets hot, and that's what happened here. He made a settlement with them to get them moved, but it's a new hotel and looks pretty cool.
You can read more about it at dnainfo.com/Chicago. Andrew Herman, thanks for coming in.
Okay.
You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Do you listen to The Big Payoff? It's a podcast at WGNplus.com. You should. It's great.
Do you want me to put you on the spot? Because I will.
I'm going to listen
to it. I saw that pause. The pause was Steve Bertrand admitting that he has not listened to my podcast.
I get it personally. We talk back and forth. But I know it's a very good podcast. And it's the Big Payoff. Suzanne Muchin is a co-host. And, she's, you know, there's a story I want to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
There's a story about Hillary Clinton. She was at this pool party. and she grabbed this 19-year-old guy, good-looking guy, mm-hmm. and she said, really, I want you to put on a Speedo. Would you put on a Speedo for me? Have you heard that story?
That is the story that would take her down. Right?
Yes, absolutely.
That's what's so amazing about this entire conversation that we're having about Trump and women is if you just reverse it for a moment the way you just did, I bet people listening to that who even believed it for a second thought, ooh,
little
gross.
Sick.
Like,
yeah.
She's a pervert. You know, you'd think something truly evil was going on.
So we're riffing a little bit off of this New York Times story that they wrote about Donald Trump. I think it was a Sunday story.
Yeah, front
made,
page.
Made a big play of it, and it was his history with women. And they talked to 40 or 50 different women. And, you know, he came out and said it was a hatchet job and they were out to get him. And, you know, okay, let me say first off that I've read accounts of the story.
Yep.
I have not read the story itself. So I'm not going to be able to judge it. But I think it showed a very complicated guy. I mean, it also pointed out it wasn't a hatchet job because it also pointed out how he was hiring women in leadership at a time no one else was.
Right.
And he puts women in position of power and does so in a way that many other people don't.
Right.
So,
the title was Trump and Women. The title of the story didn't say Trump, you know, treats women badly. Now, clearly, once you got into the story, there was the full picture. What's interesting, though, is you didn't even need the 40 interviews. We've all seen it.
Well, we've seen worse.
We've
really.
Seen worse.
Well, I mean, their lead anecdote was that swimsuit issue.
Or the swimsuit. Like, How about Megyn Kelly? The interview is going to be tonight with her and Trump on Fox. We saw him say to her something very offensive to women. So we didn't really need that story. But to your point, what's interesting here is that we have established two fundamentally different sets of criteria for judging Trump. And I'm going to go out on a limb and say not just Hillary. I think if it were Elizabeth Warren, any other candidate,
Other man, too. I mean, it's not a woman thing, I don't think.
You think any other man would have been taken down for that kind of story?
Yes.
Just Trump?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
I don't know that that's true.
Yeah, well, I think maybe not that particular story, but the behavior of Donald Trump, I think, would sink any other. I think he's singular in being able to survive that. I don't think that has to do with gender at all.
I mean,
he's the guy, he calls Ted Cruz Lion Ted, and then he pretends to be his own spokesman, John Miller.
Right.
And had admitted it in the past and now just flatly denies it.
Yes.
So clearly he's lied at one point there. And this is the guy who calls other people Lion Ted and Crooked Hillary.
It definitely doesn't affect for whatever surreal, I can't even say. It doesn't seem to affect his ratings or how people feel about him. That I agree with. I would say, I think that as a nation, we've been socialized, and not just in America, because this goes on in Europe as well, to accept the fact that our male leaders have affairs and do things that aren't exactly appropriate with women, and we forgive them. Part of it is we haven't had a woman president yet, so we really don't know. It's funny, because do you watch Veep?
Yes.
Okay, there's a storyline going on right now.
She's,
Veep, she's having
although she's,
an
she's
affair.
She's single.
She's single, but it's very public, and it's a jarring, even if you're laughing, it's this jarring thing of, oh, right, if there's a woman in the White House, we may have a John F. Kennedy at some point.
Right.
Different standards.
Yeah, so there's that. And I guess, we talk about women in the workplace and gender roles here,
right.
And I don't know exactly how all of that plays into it, but it's just a fascinating thing
to watch.
Okay, so the House Select Committee on Armed Services, it was a House committee. I'm not sure the exact committee.
Senate, yep.
No, but this was a House committee today.
Oh, today was, yesterday it was the U.S. Senate Armed Services Committee.
And the question we're talking about here is whether or not women, young women, should be required to register for the Selective Service.
Right.
I had to do that in, would have been 1979 or 1980,
right.
And was fairly new there. I mean, I guess the draft had only been gone for fewer than 10 years.
Right.
So men, young men or boys, have had to do that for 40 years.
Right.
There's a movement now to require women to do that.
Right.
And they.
So let's talk about the interesting turn of events that happened. So you have to first say women have now been put into combat roles.
There's a woman leading NORAD.
Right. I mean, that's a change. This is in real time. This is happening, right? Where women are now going to the front line. It is an obvious next question to ask that if they're being treated equally on the battlefield in terms of combat roles, why wouldn't we have a draft for women? That's what the U.S. Senate committee was saying.
You said draft. You mean
sign up
registration.
Registration.
Right.
But if you're registering for the draft, you have to do that with the mindset of
it could happen.
Could happen.
Well, what do you think of it?
So I don't think that this is helpful to the conversation that's really important, which is, should we allow women who are able, who are physically able to fight for our country on the front line? You and I had this conversation. I don't believe all women are physically capable of being on the front line in combat. If you're talking about drafting them into general service in the Army, no problem. But if we're talking about frontline combat,
so
I have a different opinion.
Are you telling me that you don't think women should be required to register just like men?
I don't think that they should be required.
Wow, that is shocking to me.
I know. See,
and
I don't
wrong
have,
on every
you,
level.
You so expect me to take the feminist point of view. And I'm saying this, though, and I'm not going to go all heady and scientific with you, but I'm actually saying...
Why, because I can't handle it because I'm a man? Is that it?
Well, we've established that. I mean, I have to lower the bar so much in this segment. It's not even funny. But the truth is, I actually don't believe that women, all women, you're making now, not all men are
absolutely
either.
Absolutely. That was going to be
right?
my point.
I knew you were going to make that point. But I would say overall, I don't think that women have been trained in any way to have a mindset in
well
combat.
I said earlier in the show, I said I was going to ask you about this, and I said I have no idea how she's going to react because she surprises mm-hmm. me mm-hmm. That really surprises me.
Yeah.
Of course they should register.
Can I tell
mean
you,
if we're going to be
yep.
in a I think it's Bertrand Russell or someone who said people who always demand consistency are, you know, weak-minded because that's what they rely on. Well, I look for consistency.
I know you do.
But if
it's very comforting.
It is comforting. It's like my blanket. But if we're going to argue that women and men can handle jobs equally and that they should be treated the same,
yes,
how in the world can you argue that in this case where it might be a little uncomfortable, we should give women a break?
Okay, because I don't think it's about being uncomfortable. Let's talk about, for example, in Israel, the IDF. All 18-year-olds, men, women, that's because there are many, many different tiers of service that are set up for those who are strong physically, those who are strong intellectually. Our armed services isn't set up that way.
Well, but there are certainly, well, there are millions of men who have signed up for the registration for the draft who are not fit or who would not make good soldiers.
And do they have?
I think I might have been one of them. Honest to God. But the law was I was required. And should there have been some terrible situation where they needed people, my name was on the list. Now, my name, I might not have gone into combat. I might have been pushing a broom or peeling potatoes. But my name was on the list because I was of age and capable. We've made the case clearly that women who are of age are capable as well.
Capable of a whole set of things that contribute to our country. The question is, has the armed services set up an infrastructure to allow for all women to play their part? Regardless of what that part is, fighting, cooking, whatever.
I think that the point of the registration is that those people can be culled. Well, so then you call them in for a draft and you see if they pass the physical and are capable. No, I completely disagree with you on this.
So which comes first? The armed services opening up their doors and saying, you know what, we are ready for men, women, whomever, transgender, we are set up for their success.
We need soldiers. We need soldiers, and we have determined, Ash Carter, Barack Obama, and others have determined that women can be SEALs, that they can be in special operations. We need soldiers, so we need the names of potential soldiers. That's what the registration is. And just because I signed it doesn't mean I'm qualified to be a soldier. It's the name of someone who might have. My son signed it. My son signed it just a few months ago, and my daughter did not.
So it's the 1% right now who would qualify for that.
You'd find other jobs. I don't know. Yeah.
Right? I'd love. So that's where we agree. If there were other jobs for them, I'd agree.
Okay, but so by that rationale, then you should have to pass a man should pass a physical to see if he's soldier worthy before he signs up.
No, by this rationale, I'm saying right now, our infrastructure does not allow for a mass influx of women to be part of our armed services.
Well, they wouldn't be. They're just registered. So
I get it, but you have to register, assuming that at any minute we could call them up.
Okay, well, we're not going to agree on this one.
We are not going to agree. See, this is why we have to go long for
right,
at some
point. I know. Suzanne Mushin, the co-host of The Big Payoff at WGNplus.com.
Steve is a huge fan. He listens every week.
I'm a big fan, and we're going to talk about it next week. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks, Steve.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thank you. you very much, Orion Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Chloe Taylor Brown is on the telephone, and she joins us now. Chloe, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thank you very much. Chloe, it's good to be here.
Chloe is a lifetime encourager, she describes herself as, and a girls' empowerment expert. And one of the things I want to talk to you about, Chloe, is, you know, the reliance that kids seem to have on electronics. Who am I kidding? The reliance that I have on electronics and how that might be getting in the way of their natural progression as kids. But before we do that, I don't know, I doubt that you were listening earlier, but we were just talking about this move in the Congress to maybe require girls, women, to sign up for the Selective Service the way men do. And the guest I had on just a few minutes ago, she thought that it was not a good idea. You deal with women, girls, and their self-esteem. Is it something you've thought about? I mean, do you have a position on that?
I didn't hear you say Selective Services.
Yeah, so, you know, when a boy turns 18, he's got to sign up for the draft. And there are people now saying, well, girls should probably do that too. You know, they are in combat roles, they're in leadership roles, and there are others who say that that's not a good idea. I mean, I don't know if that's something you've ever considered.
Well, I've never thought about that, but what has just come to me is that, well, my boys never signed up for that, and I don't know anything about it because they signed up for college, and they, you know, well, actually one's in high school, but I have one who's graduated from college, and I thought that was over in the 70s.
Uh-oh, you better
look. So I'm a little bit behind.
You're raising some lawbreakers, Chloe. You better look that up because, yeah, when you're 18, you're still supposed to sign up when you're a man. You can do it online now, but it's just one of those requirements that still is around.
Well, you know what? I think a lot of people in my circle would need to know this, and yeah. I think I will look it up, and I'll go share it with my friends so we can stop breaking the law.
Let's talk about technology. You know, the kids, everyone, they've got their nose in the screen. You know, Chloe, I've got my nose in the screen. I bet I check my phone well over 100 times a day just to look at it in one way or another. And it's your argument that this is detrimental when it comes to kids in the way they grow up and the role models they're introduced to. Explain that for me.
Well, I think that we're all somewhat addicted. And, you know, likewise, I do check my phone and my emails, and it can be addictive. The difference between you and I is that we are adults, and we're not native digitals. The children who are growing up with this, they have not learned the social skills that we've learned. So we can somewhat maneuver back and forth between the virtual world and the real world, but they're really having a challenging time of going into the real world and not being digital all the time.
Now, and so you say this can affect their self-esteem. Explain that for me.
Well, because they have not learned the social skills that they need to go out and interact, and so they're most of their media. And if you're talking about being on social media, you got to be popular. You got to fit in. You got to be a super elementary school. And so, if you think that you're not, and most aren't because they're children, they start to feel bad. And so, we're seeing instant celebrity reality TV, Instagram, and the children want to know, why can't I be that way?
Okay.
And even some adults are falling into that.
I think I am, yeah. Okay, and, you know, I get that big picture, but let me throw this at you in the minute we have left here. They said that about TV. I used to stay home on the weekends and watch cartoons all day or game shows, and then there was cable, and the kids were addicted to MTV. Isn't this just the latest incarnation of that, oh, look at what those kids are doing now? I mean, don't we as humans just continue to adapt to the new technology and what's new in our worlds?
Yes, we do adapt, and unfortunately right now they're adapting to holding their heads down, texting, and being with their electronics and not with people. So that's what we're adapting to.
Real quick then, how do we break that cycle?
Well, we talk to our children over dinner, at the pool, at the supermarket, engage them, to have them to look into our eyes, be present, ask them really great questions where it's not just a no or yes answer, but we're engaging them to get them to communicate and to know how to relate and be relatable and build rapport.
Chloe, that's tough because maybe you don't know this, but the dinner hour is the best time to get hits on Twitter. So I tend to post on Twitter over dinner. Maybe
you're
not.
Fine with the kids.
Listen, I'm glad you joined us today. Thank you very much, and good luck to you.
Thank you so.
You bet. I'm sorry we broke up a little bit there. Chloe Taylor Brown. This is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN.